Welcome to episode 18 of the Farm Exec podcast. I'm Michelle Mascali, senior editor of Farm Exec.
And I'm Kristen Harm, associate editor of Farm Exec.
For those of you joining us for the first time, Pharmaceutical Executive is a multimedia publishing brand that brings you the latest commercial insights for the C-suite. So Kristen, what are we talking about on this episode?
Today we have Chris Boone with us. We're pretty excited to showcase him on the podcast, because he's one of PharmExec's 2018 Emerging Pharma Leaders.
I had the opportunity to interview Chris, and he really gives some great insight both on the podcast and in his article on our website about preparing for roles that don't currently exist in pharma, how to be a champion for new ideas, and he talks a lot about the importance of authenticity in the workplace.
So let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Chris.
You know what I would love to learn about?
What's that?
The up-and-coming pharma and biotech leaders. You know, like how they got their start in the industry, why they picked the career they're in now, how they lead their team, and predictions for what they think the future of the industry will look like.
Actually, it's funny that you bring that up, because it's time for PharmExec's annual Emerging Pharma Leaders program. All that you have to do is check out our website to read profiles on this year's class of leaders from across the world, who are making an impact in the areas of biotech and pharma. Check out pharmexec.com for more. Hey, listeners. Today is a very special podcast, as we have the first of this year's class of PharmExec Emerging Pharma Leaders joining us. Christopher Boone is the head of Real World Data and Analytics Center of Excellence at Pfizer. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
So, Michelle, you interviewed Chris for this year's EPL feature, correct?
I did. It was a pleasure to speak with Chris for our feature on this year's EPL, which actually can be found on our website at pharmexec.com. And one of the things I found most interesting about Chris is that he's in a job that didn't even exist 10 years ago. But before we get to that, Chris, can you briefly tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. As you stated, I am the head of Real World Data and Analytics at Pfizer. I would consider myself to be a non-traditional pharma executive, meaning that I actually grew up in the world of hospitals and health systems, actually doing informatics. So, I always tell people that I started off in a career that was in informatics, and it wasn't as sexy then as one would say it is now. We were still in the basement of most hospitals, but really the primary motivation for that was mostly not to be in the world of health informatics or health IT, but to really become an administrator of the hospital health system. If you read the article, you'll see that I basically grew up in a low-income neighborhood in Dallas called Oak Cliff, and I personally got to witness firsthand my mother struggle with her lupus and getting care in an area that was pretty, we'll say, negligent. The community was absent of any effective and high quality hospitals, and there was a pretty large community. So when she would struggle, we had to actually find the best care for her in different neighborhoods. In some cases, we had to settle for what we had. But it was really at that time that I knew that someone had to make a change, and I thought that the best path for me to seek that level of transformation in our neighborhood was to do it myself. And so I figured I would be president and CEO of a health system. I would help treat these underserved communities, and the rest is history. But, it was really kind of interesting when I actually got into the world of hospitals and health systems. I quickly realized that my greatest talent was in leading digital and data and technology transformations. And that in and of itself would be much more transformational for the industry. But more importantly, I could actually reach more patients. And so that is how I ended up where I am today.
You've had a pretty interesting career path. What sparked your interest in public health and data? Was it primarily your mom's lupus, or is there a little bit more to it?
Yeah, it was really primarily her lupus. I mean, and it started with the inability to effectively share data across different providers. And what that was a clear indication of is that the data really wasn't being utilized. It was just more of a documentation a mechanism for that individual doc. But if they weren't sharing the data with other doctors and they weren't using that information to make action-oriented or actionable decisions, then you really aren't improving the state of care or the quality of care given to each of the patients. So really my thinking was A, first of all, we need to share the data. Secondly, the data needs to be in a format that many of these care providers could actually utilize it. And then, you know, and since we're capturing the data anyway, why not get smarter from it and make more informed clinical decisions? And that is really has been always my motivation, and it still is. It remains my motivation to how we can more effectively utilize healthcare data and decision-making in all aspects of healthcare, just I mean, whether it be from clinical, from bedside care to either payer, provider, payer decisions to policy decisions, and even where I am now as it pertains to clinical research and how we incorporate that patient voice into everything we do in pharma.
So I alluded to this a little bit before. You're actually in a job that didn't exist just a few years ago. And that presents a number of different challenges, including getting buy-in from colleagues through this new initiative. Something I've had to do a number of times with various jobs, and it's not always easy. So tell us how you approached this new position and became a champion for your team and the use of data with the rest of the company.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, that I have to say is probably the number one challenge that, you know, we face in the roles that we're in. I mean, as you described or as you alluded to, the role did not exist 10 years ago. So you really are talking about a role where most C-suite executives and senior leadership are still trying to understand the value that it brings to their organization. And that value is still associated primarily with top or bottom line impacts. So we kind of have this unique challenge of how do you justify your own existence in many respects and how do you make that big splash? So I would say that honestly for me, I spend a vast majority of my time in the cultural transformation aspects of what real-world data and real-world evidence can bring to a pharma company. So and that requires a lot of, I like to say, evangelism, education, inspiration, planning, envisioning, you know, what the future could be. And then you want to develop strategies that go along with that. So really, if you can really formulate a clear vision and sell that vision to the organization, that's going to probably be one of the greater skill sets. But the vision has to be, I think most people get caught up in these kind of theoretical aspirations that really aren't as practical as they should be. And, you know, and every organization is different. Thus, every organizational culture is different. And you have to find the right balance between that aspiration and what can be practically done within your organization. So that is one of the greater challenges.
You've actually been a champion of data in the health and pharma industries for a while, and you've even served as CEO of the Health Data Consortium, which is a public-private partnership working with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, for those who don't know, which was focused on expanding open health data and open government movements in the U.S. So how have you seen the merging of pharma and data progress, and where do you think it will go in the future?
Well, I think it's going to only progress even more so than it is right now. I think the whole healthcare industry is undergoing a transformation, not just a single sector. We all have, historically it's been very siloed, very fragmented as it pertains to each sector within the industry, and we were very much engaging on a transactional basis, you know, right? Manufacturers were selling things, you know, these guys were buying things, other people were using things, so on and so forth. But right now what you're seeing is truly a cross-pollinization of each sector within the industry where we all realize that we must work together, and we must keep this patient-centric philosophy at the forefront at all times. And so now you're seeing these very unique collaborations and alliances being formed. And in some cases, you're seeing outright acquisitions that we would have never thought of 15 or 20 years ago. So I think the industry itself is undergoing this really critical transformation. And what that necessitates, again, is that organizational transformation or cultural transformation within each company to be more receptive to those types of strategic collaborations that are, for all intents and purposes, are counter to what we've seen and have done in the past. And it's strange because, you know, pharma has always had this kind of outsider looking in view on the rest of the healthcare world. And I think a large part of that is the lack of trust that exists across the different sectors that we must address at some point to really become part of that ecosystem to feel as though we're all in this together.
So when it comes to data, what is the most challenging issue facing those in the pharmacy suite, and how do they tackle it?
Yeah, I mean, for us, the biggest challenge when it comes to real-world data specifically is our access and the availability of it. So our access to it and the availability of the types of data we need to conduct clinical research in order to demonstrate the value of our medicines. I think that real-world data is a new area where we don't necessarily generate that data. That data is primarily generated through the patient, provider, and the payers. But we need that data in order to conduct many of the real-world data studies that we choose to embark on. And so I do see a model, and I do see an opportunity that there is for us to co-create that evidence with many of those other stakeholder groups. And obviously the big challenge there is the trust to formulate those types of collaborative relationships. But for us, data access or data accessibility and data availability. And then the third thing I would add to that is data integrity. So you have access to the data. You have to make sure that the data that you need is available, but then you have to ensure the integrity or quality of the data is there so that we could actually produce the regulatory-grade evidence that we need to produce to justify any other decisions thereafter.
Chris, you're also an adjunct professor, right?
Yeah.
And where do you teach again, and what subjects?
Yeah, so I am an adjunct professor at the University of Cincinnati and their Master's in Healthcare Informatics program. I have the great fortune of teaching courses that range from introduction to health informatics. You can almost view that as health informatics 101. I also teach the advanced database design, which is more focused on building data infrastructures that would support this type of aggregation and analysis of healthcare data, and then also teach a course around healthcare analytics, which is very much so that one course that you're talking about data warehouses and data environments is one thing, but then you actually talk about the pure analytics, which is applying analytical methods to that data and producing a certain outcome.
Given your experiences and how fast things are changing in the industry, how do you prepare your students for a successful career?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And it's funny because, you know, one would assume that I'm a data scientist, the truth is, the reality is, I'm a social scientist who just happens to specialize in health data. And so really when I'm thinking about, the individual student and the future of the healthcare workforce and the trends I see happening, I always think about the whole person. And I think Jack Ma, the founder of Alibaba, was at the World Economic Forum earlier this year. And he said it best, and I practiced this philosophy, but I've never articulated it the way he did. And he basically said that everything we teach should be different from the machines. And what he was speaking of, you know, obviously being a technologist himself, is this push towards automation and artificial intelligence and how the future of the world looks and the skills that we need to equip our students with and even our adult learners with in order to operate in this new world. And essentially, that is totally aligned with my thinking that, you know, much of the automation will be a lot of, pretty much our routine practices or analytical processes that we have to do today, but then those roles may not exist 5 to 10 years from now. So to me, it's all about molding and shaping and building up, I think, more the softer skills of the student. I think that they should be able to effectively function in a team environment. So that type of collaboration, I think that they should be there should be a heavy emphasis on their ability to think critically and think creatively, meaning that they can assess the situation, clearly identify the problems, and generate new ideas to address those particular situations. I think exercising that kind of intellectual curiosity muscle that we all have is going to be extremely important. And because there's a certain agility that one needs to have. We know the world is going to continue to change, and that speed of change is only going to increase. So having that level of intellectual curiosity and agility is going to be important. And the last thing that I would say that I try to push, and it's probably most important, is this idea around leadership. And there are several attributes of great leaders. And I've always been a student of leadership. And so I can't emphasize that enough to the students how critical that particular skill is, especially in these more technical fields where you're communicating with non-technical people. And so those are the things that I emphasize in my courses.
So, Chris, one of the things that really stood out to me, and I thought was interesting when we were doing your EPL interview, was that you told me about how you have mentors that sometimes don't realize they're your mentors. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. I think when it comes to this idea of leadership, you know, I feel like there are certain things that we have that are natural or intrinsic in our own personalities and nature, but there are other things that really need to be, that can be taught and should be shaped and molded. And so I always have this affinity towards great leaders that I would identify and I would routinely and continuously ask questions to. And so I learned very early on that some people are very, very much intimidated when you say, hey, I want you to be my mentor, because they think there's a certain expectation or obligation that's associated with that type of relationship. And so they're usually, you know, some people, not all, are very uncomfortable with the title mentor. So what I learned is that I would never use the term mentor at all. I would just say, hey, do you mind if I reach out to you from time to time to ask you specific questions? And whether they knew it or not, they were my adopted mentor, and they became part of my council of mentors that I could certainly reach out to ask very targeted questions about different aspects. And the thing that I think is extremely important for people to realize is that there is not a single mentor that can address every single question, issue that one deals with. And another important thing, and I had a mentor share this with me very early on in my career, is that the personal and the human side of a leader is as critical as the professional side. You know, the last thing you want to do is go into these worlds of being a great leader and you're so robotic and you're so out of touch with the basic human need, which is kind of what Jack Ma was alluding to, that you cannot relate and therefore you cannot lead. And so I personally always had great mentors in my personal and professional lives that allowed me to continuously grow as an individual. And I hope that leadership oozes out of your pores and you're able to inspire and influence people to move in the direction that you know the organization needs to move into. So my council mentors, some don't know that they're in there, so I won't add them. but I will say that has been probably the greatest move or decision I could have made, professional decision I could have made for myself.
That's really great, and I'm sure that a lot of our listeners could relate to that. Before we wrap up, we can't not talk about your Twitter handle, which we all love over here at FarmExec. So can you tell us about how that name came about?
Yeah, it was about, I was leading the Health Data Consortium, I started leading it over there in 2014, and it was so funny. I was having these different conversations with people, and they go, you know, you really have this love for data, and, like, you're pushing for it, and it's almost like you're kind of like a hippie or something, right? And then I said, you know, huh. And it just struck me, like, data hippie. And I was like, it was kind of very uncharacteristic of me to, like, brand myself or something like that. And if you read some of the articles out there online that talk about it, one guy told me that, I by no means fit the profile of a hippie, which I thought made it that much more hilarious and fun to play with. But I thought the principles of evangelizing this whole idea of data and being this patient advocate who wanted to see the system transform using data to impact the patient experience, it aligned. And so, so it sucked. And so I've been using that as more of a movement, towards, you know, democratizing data for the public good. And I've always advocated in the mantra, then you have to put the data back in the hands of the patient. Now, it's great that we're having many of these discussions now, but that's something that I started, you know, speaking to years ago. I've always felt that the data was the property of the patient and they should be the stewards of that data. You know, and, you know, I know some people hate to hear that, you know, but that was my firm belief. And I thought that that is the, that was the most sound approach to effectively transforming the system. And so thus Data Hippie and my, the idea of it was to not to be a single data hippie, you know, but the idea was to create a movement of data hippies, that we could all transform the system. And that's really where the name came from, and it stuck.
That's awesome. We love that name. We think it's really funny.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you for coming on the podcast today. We really appreciate you taking the time out.
That's great. No, thank you. This has been fun, and I really greatly appreciate the opportunity, and I'm humbled by the acknowledgement to be part of this year's class.
Well, thanks, Chris. We're happy to have you. Just as a reminder to our listeners, if you want to learn more about Chris and the rest of our 2018 Emerging Pharma Leaders roster, you can read about them on our website at pharmaexec.com.
And now it's time for this week's leadership tip from Pharma Execs.
Great. This is Chris Boone. I'm the Vice President and Head of the Global Real World Evidence Center of Excellence at Pfizer, also known as the Real World Data and Analytics Center of Excellence. And my leadership tip for everyone is twofold. First thing is that you certainly want to formulate, create a very strong, robust council of mentors to ensure that you stay grounded, but more importantly, to help guide you through your career. The next thing that I would say is something that was shared with me at a very early age, and I will attribute it to my late grandmother, who always used to describe life as being in three states, right? You either coming out of something, you're either going through something, or you're about to go into something. And the important lesson there is to recognize that you're always in the process of going through something. So it's all about perspective. And so I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed this week's Pharma Exec podcast. We are always pleased to take you behind the headlines, provide expert tips from industry leaders, and give you an inside look at what the PharmExec staff is working on.
Remember that you can always find us on the web at pharmexec.com, on Twitter at PharmExec, or on Instagram at PharmExecutive, and on YouTube.
The views expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of PharmExec, its parent company, or our advertisers. For editorial questions, please email editorial director lisa.henderson@ubm.com. And for sponsorship opportunities, please email group publisher Todd Baker at todd.baker@ubm.com.